Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and also 96.5 TIC. Welcoming you to this morning's Face Connecticut. We're going to be talking all about maple syrup. And I have two guests, Brian Hurlburt, the Connecticut Agricultural Commissioner. Good morning, Brian, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having us, and thanks for promoting Connecticut Maple Weekend this weekend for us.
Happy to have you on the show, and we're also joined with Matt Wilkinson. He's the president of the Maple Syrup Producers Association of Connecticut. Good morning, Matt. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Brian, this isn't necessarily the first official Maple Syrup Weekend in Connecticut, a big weekend that many people look forward to come mid-March. But it's the first official one since COVID hit, right?
This is certainly the first real kickoff since COVID again, and trying to get people out and about and getting people out of their homes and visiting the houses.
What makes Maple Weekend so special in Connecticut? There are some people who may not even be aware that maple is a really big, important aspect of Connecticut's agriculture. And that's true. It is a big part of it.
It is. In Connecticut, we produce over 20,000 gallons annually, which generates over $1.5 million of sales for our maple operations. But I'll let Matt answer why it's such a great weekend and what families could can look forward to when they're visiting the houses around the state.
I think the kind of one of the important pieces to it, or the exciting things about it, it's the first real agricultural harvest, so to speak, of the year. It's it's kickoff of spring. The winter is finally over. So it's a great chance to get outside. The smells and the sights of maple. It's one of those quintessential New England activities, as making maple syrup. And it's such a great chance for a family to get out and do things together. And the Maple Weekend is a great opportunity for young kids to see what's going on and kind of get a little bit of hands-on with agriculture.
Maple Weekend in Connecticut is kind of a weekend where everyone is going around. They're doing a little bit of shopping. They're buying maple syrup. There are demonstrations, depending on where you go, where you can actually watch how maple syrup is produced. And so that leads me to my next question. How is maple syrup produced? What goes into it? A lot of people, they enjoy it on their pancakes, but they don't know exactly what goes into the process of making maple syrup. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So we start out by out in the woods, we tap our trees, either with buckets or with tubing systems, and then we collect the sap, and then either hopefully goes to your sugar house or we truck it to the sugar houses, depending on where your woods are located, and then either start boiling it, or some of the larger producers will use reverse osmosis machines to take some of the water out of sap. Just what it does, it just makes the boiling process a little bit more efficient, a little bit more less time involved. And then we boil it to about 7 degrees above the boiling temperature of water on that day, and that gets maple syrup. So there, the only ingredients is pure maple sap. It takes about between 40, 53 gallons of sap to make a gallon of maple syrup. Later in the season, as the sugar content starts to drop, it takes a little bit more. So it's a pretty significant amount of sap involved in the harvest process to get those gallons of maple syrup.
And I'm curious, how much sap can your average tree put out per season?
So it depends on the number of runs that season, but an average tree will put out between a half and a gallon and a half a day, depending on how good the run is. And generally in Connecticut, just because we have some temperature swings, a little bit of unpredictability in our seasons here, a tree will give you 20 to 30, 40 gallons of sap per year. On a really good year, you'll get up those higher numbers.
It's true that the colder nights, the slightly warmer days, that is helpful for the maple crop, correct?
Yes, we want 20 degrees at night and 40 degrees or so during the day. Those freezes at night help recharge the sugars in the sap, as well as the temperature changes cause the sap to flow up and down through the tree, and that's how we get our sap runs. Once we stop getting those freezes, the tree sort of reaches a little bit of a homeostasis point or whatever, a little bit of a balance, and the sap quits to run. And then when we get those higher temperatures, sap actually spoils very quickly and does not make very good syrup.
Is there a difference in taste? If I were to get maple syrup that was made from sap that was perhaps tapped in Burlington, for example, or somewhere in Western Connecticut, versus sap that made maple syrup in Eastern Connecticut, is there a difference in the taste? Is there a variety?
Well, there are varieties, but it's more based on the coloring and flavoring, and that will be consistently graded across the state. Either the lights, ambers, darks, very darks. The taste, though, is very different from every sugar bush, and it's contributed to by the soils, the minerals in the ground, how much moisture that particular sugar bush had, the temperatures those days. So every sugar bush provides a slightly different flavors. Sometimes they're very subtle differences, but there are definitely differences in the flavors.
Question for Brian as we go about Maple Weekend this weekend here in Connecticut. And of course, we're speaking with Brian Hulbert. He's one half of our guest today, the Connecticut Agricultural Commissioner. I'm curious, how can people go and learn what kind of event there are going on this weekend? There are many of them and across the state. Could you talk a little bit about the organization of them?
Yeah, it's folks can go to ctmaple.org, Maple Weekend, to learn more. That's the Connecticut Maple Syrup Producers Association website. Just Google Connecticut Maple Weekend. And you can find the Maple Syrup Association did a really nice job of identifying participating venues by town. So you can look for a local venue, or if you want to do a day trip and get out, see some place that you haven't been in a little while across the state, head across the state and visit a sugar house. If you visit our ctgrownmap.org, you will be able to see, what other farm events or opportunities are around that neighborhood.
Brian, are you going to be stopping by any places this weekend? Any favorites? Any places maybe you haven't tried before?
I can't claim any favorites for fear of what that would do to me in my position. Yes, we are planning on not only bringing my family out, but bring my brother and his wife and my brother-in-law and his family out to visit some maple houses this weekend, so that they can get the full experience as well, and get the kids really interested in it. I mean, when you're saying you're going to do a family outing, you might not get the greatest response. When you say you're going to go visit a sugar shack, I think the kids are going to be a little bit more excited.
Coming out of COVID-19, is there a lot of demand for people to get out and go to check out these maple shows? Because I don't think that there have been many opportunities to do that the last 2 years.
What we've seen, especially during COVID-19, and we launched the Revised Connecticut Grown campaign about a year ago, is that people are really interested in supporting their local businesses. And COVID-19 really reinforced that community spirit. And part of the benefit that extended into was Connecticut Farms. Connecticut Farms are local businesses. They're producing great products. As we saw in grocery stores, when supply chains got disrupted, there was a lack of variety. But if you go to your local farm, you have everything there. And so we have seen during the course of COVID-19, people turning back to their communities, back to the farms, and a more renewed interest in supporting them. So it's our goal that events like this, the different agritourism events across the year, will continue to reinforce that. And we use the Connecticut Grown campaign on a month-long, annual basis to make sure that we are regularly promoting what's in season, where to go, and how you can support Connecticut agriculture.
What kind of planning goes into the maple events typically? Do you reach out to them? Do they reach out to you? Is it a big collaboration? Are some of these, for example, one that comes to mind, the Hebron Maple Fest, that has been going on for many, many years. Is it just the same thing every year? What goes into the planning of these events?
I'll let Matt answer that, because the Maple Syrup Association does a great job working with their members to provide, the individual members with that information and then coordinate it at the state level. So, Matt.
Thanks, Brett. So Hebron actually is run by a separate organization. They've been running it for years. Within the association, though, at our annual meetings, we have done some training sessions for our members about how to run a successful open house, how to advertise yourself, how to do, some grassroots marketing techniques. And we worked with Brian, particularly the last couple of years. The Department of Ag gave us a lot of COVID-19 guidance, like how we could keep open by appointment visits and some cautionary protocols to use and stuff. So we then passed all that information on to our members and work with educating them. We've also had insurance companies in to kind of help them out, like how do you keep that liability under control at your farm? What do you, some techniques and things to keep a nice, safe, enjoyable event for everybody. And then we also do some assistance with promotion for the individual sugar houses, as well as we work with, Brian and his crew. They help us a tremendous amount, pushing things to like the CT tourism groups. And then we also try to work with the other organizations like the Hebron Maple Fest, the Portland has a festival, like Tim Gannon at Primarily Farm, some of the other nonprofits and town-owned and agencies out there, just to kind of keep a consistent timeline that the events happen, the consistent messaging out there, and help each other advertise, kind of shared advertising. Like Brian said, this is a huge agritourism opportunity for us. Maple syrup, it's not an insignificant amount of money, but it is a small industry in the state, and it's a lot of farm to consumer sales, either through farmers markets or direct at the sugar houses and stuff. And so these are really important events for us, as well as we love maple syrup. We love to show people how it's done and be there for a great spring event. So it's really important for it to be successful. And so there's a lot of work. There's a lot of cleaning the sugar house. There's a lot of setup, making sure parking's okay for people coming in and out of those sugar houses, setting up the products, getting volunteers or family roped in to help them with sales and helping, help guests get in and out of the sugar house and stuff. But it's something that the association has worked very hard to make sure our members are successful at it, and that we're all doing it safely too. So.
And a great product to share, right? I mean, that's the kicker, right, Matt? I mean, it's maple syrup, it's the maple candies. And you want to make sure that, as you said, families have a safe and welcome environment to do it. And the product will draw people out there. It's just organizing the logistics and the setup around it.
Yes. Yep.
Another quick question for Matt Wilkinson. And of course, we're talking with Matt. He's the president of the Maple Syrup Producers Association of Connecticut. The last 2 years, COVID-19, it disrupted everything, every kind of industry that there can be thought of. How did these maple syrup producers get by? Were they partnering with stores? Were they shipping out goods? If they couldn't be part of a maple festival in their community at large, what were they doing to stay afloat?
We have only a couple producers in the state are full-time producers. The bulk of us are something else. It's a sort of an additive piece to either the farm or sideline business. But like Brian said, we actually, a lot of people ventured into online sales, which really helped a lot, as well as more of our producers kind of reached out to the farmers market side of the house or started to work at farmers markets. just like Brian had said, we saw actually increased sales the last couple of years and a large renewed interest in local grown. So I would say we sold the bulk of our products personally at farmers markets. The word of mouth, the sugar house sales, that didn't necessarily suffer. Our sales were spread over the year more so than normal. Normally we have a big bulk sales at this time of the year with the maple weekend. So I think producers saw their sales spread over the year a little bit more. But I think speaking with the producers around the state, most saw an increase in sales so for the last couple of years, which is a good thing for our industry.
Well, and one of the things that we did on the onset of COVID-19 in the Lamont administration is that we deemed farmers markets, farm stores as essential. So they had the ability to remain open and receive customers. Now, the way they've done it versus years past, as Matt was just saying, you know, maybe it was by appointment, maybe it's limited hours or limited people in the store, but they were able to stay open. They were able to get to markets and they were able to have customers. So that was really critical. We recognized early that, you know, farms are businesses. Farms provide food. This is an important opportunity to maintain, not only for the economy, but for food access.
A crisis of another kind, really. Gypsy moths. A few years ago, I remember that gypsy moths were particularly an issue in eastern Connecticut. They moved west a little bit, but it was really eastern Connecticut that was hardest hit by the gypsy moths. Did that impact maple agriculture in Connecticut?
We had some minor impacts oddly, I think the oaks took a harder hit than the maples did as far as tree health did. However, up north, Connecticut suffered slightly from it. There are areas in New York and Vermont that had large-scale defoliation, and they really did take a hit. It does seem like they pretty much recovered. The good news is the maples are a lot more resilient than some of the others, say the oaks that got hit harder. So the next year they bounced right back, and I didn't hear of any large-scale losses in any of the sugar bushes. We're a little more concerned about the spotted lanternfly, to be honest.
Oh, yes, the spotted lanternfly, which started to come into Connecticut from the west, I believe, is where it was detected. Southwest Connecticut was where it was first detected, right?
It started
to move over.
Yeah.
What kind of threat does that pose to maples?
And Brian, you may be a little more spun about it. We're not sure, is I think the bottom line. They do have some issues with some issues with maples, but it's like any of the other invasives like the emerald ash borer beetle. They've taken out the ashes. That doesn't mean eventually they might move on to another species. So it's a big concern to us for watching for that.
Well, and what we're concerned with is the impact of climate change on all agriculture. And it's not just varying temperatures, or more intense, more frequent, you know, storms of 100-year levels, but also the ability for these invasive pests to move in and stay here. And so we're very concerned that if we're not proactive managing these things, that it'll be too late and being reactive won't be enough, which is why we work with the industry and the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station, University of Connecticut College of Ag Extension, to promote, disseminate educational materials, let people be aware of what to look for, not only farmers, but for consumers too, so they can be part of the controls.
And I think I heard something, Brian, and maybe this is a good question for you, Brian Hulbert, the Connecticut Agricultural Commissioner. There was a tree tap at the Capitol in Hartford, right, for maple syrup. I think I heard about that a few weeks ago.
I'll give credit where credit is due. That was Matt's idea. He said we've been trying to run.
Great.
He said we've been trying to do the ceremonial tappings, and last year we got delayed, but with COVID and we were out at the Lieutenant Governor and I were out at Lamont Sugar House 2 years ago with a tree tapping, and he goes, you know, we want to do one of these things. He goes, what about being on the Capitol grounds? And the Capitol grounds are very difficult to organize events at because it's a historic property. And I said, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. And we did. We had a great ceremony with Lieutenant Governor. Senator Kathy Austin joined us, a number of members of the Maple Syrup Producers Association, some members of the beginning of the Connecticut Farmer Veteran Coalition, and we're able to tap a historic maple on the Capitol grounds. So it was a great way to celebrate Connecticut's heritage and culture and future.
One thing I didn't think about there was, like you said, the logistics of doing that on such a historic property. How did you guys work around that?
We had a lot of people whose response was, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. And it just kept moving along the chain. And eventually we got the appropriate approvals. I think everybody thought it was a pretty neat idea. It was just, you know, what needs to be done to make it happen. And because it was such a neat idea, we had a lot of willingness to work through it.
And I'm assuming that the tree put out some good sap. Yes.
It was probably a 200-year-old maple on the grounds. And they're well cared for. The trees are well cared for on the Capitol grounds. So it was definitely a healthy one.
Does it matter how old the tree is when you're tapping it for sap? Is it better if it's older, younger? Does it not matter?
It doesn't matter on so much on the age, but they have to be at least 12 inches in diameter, which is generally a 35 to 40-year-old tree before we tap them. So it is. We are very much in the sustainability business. So we want them around for years to come.
What happens if somebody can't get out for the remainder of this weekend? They miss Maple Weekend. Maybe they're out of state, whatever the case may be. Are there opportunities to buy maple products in Connecticut during the year?
Sure. Just about all year long, there are several stores. A lot of the grocery stores have Connecticut maple from some of the different producers around the state on their shelves. The other thing is during the market season, both indoor winter markets and the summer farmers markets, there is a maple vendor at, I would pretty much say, every farmers market in the state, so that you can go out and support it. And then if you go on our website, there's a listing of all the sugar houses that are open, and they may not be boiling, but most of them will do on-site sales year round also.
So going forward, are you already thinking about what to do next year?
Sure. I got to challenge Brian to a harder ceremonial tapping season for next year.
that'll be difficult to do. That'll be a challenge, but I think we're up for it. I think we've had some great successes and some great interest, and it's, you know, it is a local industry. You know, there's not every state in the nation produces maple syrup, and so it's something that we should celebrate. It's you know, truly a Connecticut product, and so we'll figure it out. I'll let Matt get through this weekend before we start planning next year, though.
Yeah, give me a couple of nights of sleep after that.
Tell him how many nights you like. So when the sap runs, you've got to boil it within 24 to 48 hours. It's not like, you know, Matt can aggregate all of the sap and then on a nice cozy Saturday after he's, you know, had a big breakfast of, you know, pancakes and Connecticut bacon, you know, head out to the sugar house and, you know, take his time. It's when it happens, it needs to happen. And it doesn't happen generally, you know, during regular office hours.
No, basically it's about a 6-week season, but it's very intense. And Brian's right. Monday night I was boiling until 2:30 in the morning and then get up at 5:30 and go to work the next morning. So it is, we do it because we have a passion for it and a love for it. It's certainly not because it's convenient. There's a lot of late nights, a lot of long days, during the season boiling. Fortunately it's a short season so that we can recover afterwards.
One last question. Do you guys have any stories from people who come from out of state into Connecticut? You know, maybe people from neighboring New York or Massachusetts or Rhode Island. They like going to a particular house, or they've bumped into you guys before and you hear their stories about a weekend in Connecticut. Any stories like that?
I've run into at some farmers markets, people that are vacationing. And I think Korea and Japan were the farthest away I've seen, I've heard of visitors who are coming.
I don't have an out-of-state example, but I will say every time we do one of these, I learn a new way or a new product that incorporates maple syrup. So earlier today, we were at the sugar house at Parmalee Farm, and somebody was mentioning putting maple syrup in your tea. Somebody puts it in their coffee. Putting it on vanilla ice cream is always a great way. You know, obviously pancakes is, you know, and waffles are the traditional, but there's a lot of interest also with the Connecticut brewers to incorporate maple syrup into their beers, their craft beers. So there's a lot of ways to celebrate and enjoy maple syrup. And I keep hearing of new ones every time.
Maple syrup cotton candy was one that I discovered
candy. There's a guy out in Northeast Connecticut who does a significant amount of maple syrup cotton candy at the Coventry Farmers Market. Yeah.
I'd like to thank both of our guests on Face Connecticut. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Brian Herbert, the Connecticut Agricultural Commissioner, and Matt Wilkinson, too. He joined us, the president of the Maple Syrup Producers Association of Connecticut. Thanks for talking maple with me, guys.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much for having us.
And I'd like to thank you for tuning in to this week's Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.